State of the Union blitz with his cabinet to discuss the economic agenda. What do you think needs to be the message conveyed throughout this country right now?
Well, I think the message needs to be conveyed that we are about to go into a political period that is not unlike the political period in 1876. It's not unlike 1968, in which race is on the agenda, whether explicitly or implicitly. The Democrats have never really been effective since...
We have 30 seconds.
Lee Atwater made it clear that race was going to be used as a political cudgel. So this is the opportunity to prepare Americans to support the idea behind multiracial democracy, not allow race to get into the way, and say what they stand for once and for all.
Professor Kimberly Crenshaw, we thank you so much for being with us. Executive Director of the African American Policy Forum, Professor of Law at UCLA and Columbia University. That does it for our show, Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Noreen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, Sanjeev Lopez. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM. Every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-hosts O.B. Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African-American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk, every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO-FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland City workers end their strike with a tentative agreement with the city. We hear from a financial expert about how Americans can tackle mounting debt. And in international news, a massive earthquake and its aftershocks claim nearly 4,000 lives in Turkey and Syria. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 6th, 2023. I'm Althea Billings. Portland City workers ended their strike for now. They reached a tentative agreement with the city on Saturday. The agreement is between the city and workers represented by Laborers Local 483. It remains tentative until the Portland City Council approves it. More than 600 Portland workers went on strike on Thursday after nearly a year of negotiations broke down over wage increases and cost of living adjustments. Their previous contract actually expired in June. That included workers in the Water Bureau, Transportation, Environmental Services, and Parks and Recreation departments. They're responsible for fixing sewage leaks, cleaning trash at city parks, repairing roads, and clearing streets of ice and snow. This was Portland's first city workers' strike in 2 decades. Portland leaders were ready to use independent contractors if the strike lasted longer. The new 4-year contract includes a 3% annual raise for the first year, retroactive to July 2022, plus a cost of living adjustment capped at 5%. The second year includes another 5% cost of living adjustment. There will then be payment adjustments made based on the consumer price index for the remaining 2 years. Union workers originally pushed for a 3.5% annual raise and an uncapped 5% cost of living adjustment, meaning wages would increase even when national inflation rates exceeded 5%. Portland leaders had said they could not afford the wage increases that were proposed and instead originally offered a 1% annual raise and a capped 5% cost of living raise annually for the first 2 years. There were other differences as well related to pensions. Local 483 field representative James O'Loughlin said, quote, "I think there's a lot of work yet to be done, but this is a great foundation to build upon for our membership and really for working standards in the whole Portland community," end quote. The Democratic National Committee votes to shake up the presidential primary calendar, and Biden gets a strong jobs report ahead of his second State of the Union. With that story and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
All those in favor of approving the report say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and the report in the Rules and Bylaws Committee has been adopted.
Democratic National Committee Chair Jamie Harrison says changes made to the DNC presidential primary calendar elevate the diverse communities at the heart of the party. The DNC approved a plan to replace Iowa's caucus with South Carolina's primary. Nevada and New Hampshire would go next on the same day, followed by Georgia and then Michigan. Labor Secretary Marty Walsh says the latest jobs report shows President Joe Biden is delivering results for the American people.
It's a good, strong report. It shows that, you know, 12.1 million jobs have been created since President Biden has taken office.
Biden is expected to devote much of his second State of the Union address Tuesday to jobs, inflation, and efforts to rebuild the nation's infrastructure. The jobs report showed the unemployment rate fell to its lowest level in more than 50 years. Americans for Prosperity, the donor and activist network fueled by conservative billionaire Charles Koch, says it will oppose another campaign by former President Donald Trump.
Now more than ever, we need a strong, principled freedom movement.
Trump has already announced his bid, but many Republican donors say they're frustrated by disappointing midterm election results for Trump-backed candidates. A Washington Post ABC News poll finds Americans have little interest in a Trump-Biden presidential rematch. Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey tells NBC News that a policing reform bill could pass the current Congress, despite a lack of interest from some Republicans.
And we are a nation right now that should set the global standard for professionalism policing, and we are falling short of that to the horror of more and more Americans.
A new survey shows an overwhelming majority in the U.S. wants policing reform. The Department of Justice will conduct a review of the Memphis Police Department following the death of Tyree Nichols at the hands of five officers.
U.S. China right now are in a sort of a low-stake confrontation with a very high stake at hand.
Hudson Institute China Director Miles Yu says current U.S.-China relations are so tense that any incident could ignite sharp friction. Navy divers are gathering pieces of what the Chinese say was a weather balloon shot down off the coast of South Carolina. Lawmakers from both parties have questioned how the balloon was allowed to pass over the U.S. Election security experts say problems with the devices used to maintain registration lists have helped spread election conspiracy theories. Technical problems cause significant delays for voters in California, Ohio, and Michigan. There are no national security and reliability standards for the devices, but observers don't expect the standards in time for the next election. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Well, Biden got a strong jobs report last week, but the economic conditions in the United States are still extremely difficult for the average person to manage. This is especially true when it comes to inflation and managing personal debt. KBOO's Nina Mayfair spoke with a financial expert on the issue to learn more about how people can start getting ahead.
Escalating prices for gas, food, and rent launched U.S. inflation to a four-decade peak in 2022. The impacts of inflation continue to be felt by Americans of all demographics. The coronavirus pandemic increased credit card debt for 30% of Americans. The top two drivers of this debt are inflation and income loss. Many Americans are unable to pay off their debt because their paychecks continue to go towards inflated goods and services. Finance expert Mary Jo Terry works with consumers to create a budgeting process to pay off debt. Terry encourages consumers to first take a close look at where their money goes as a way to reduce spending.
Even if you can take a piece of paper and a pen and write down all of your monthly expenses, that's going to be step one. You actually want to, within the first month, track how much you're spending at your coffee shop, your fast food place, your favorite clothing store. But what you'll realize is you may be able to find $100 to $200 just sitting there alone. You could look at this as a really good time to do an overall look at your budget, your spending, and what your true family goals are. A lot of us don't want to look at realistically what we spend on a week by week basis, just simply because we have such busy lives. But even taking a little bit of time, getting a budgeting app on your phone and really paying attention to what things cost.
The average American has 4 credit cards, according to the 2019 Experian Consumer Credit Review. 2 in 10 Americans spend over 50% of their income to pay back what they owe each month. Terry acknowledges it can be difficult to decide which card to pay first.
You're really going to want to pay attention to the interest rates. Are they variable? Are they fixed? If you have multiple credit cards, it's a good time to say, let's pay off the high rate card first and then start paying on down on the other cards.
Student debt looms large too. Oregonians combined have more than $20 billion in student loan debt, according to an analysis in April 2022.
The good news is there's no interest accruing on those loans at this time. The bad news is, depending on how the Supreme Court rules, depends on how quickly these loans go back into repayment. Right now, it's scheduled for August of 2023, but realistically, if they rule sooner, the Department of Education has indicated that they could put those loans back into repayment earlier than August. A lot of us have not looked at student loans at all. You really want to know how much you owe and who your servicer is. So I would go out to studentaid.gov, and it's a simple logon. Studentaid.gov will allow you to log in and allow you to confirm who your servicer is, how much you owe, and approximately what your monthly payments are. If that payment is not something you can afford, you're going to want to look into the income-driven repayment programs. There's actually 4 programs available. What you're going to do is you're going to speak with your loan servicer. You can also look at studentaid.gov. There's details out there, and see which program fits best for you. If you're unemployed, there's refinance programs, there's consolidation, there's a lot of options. Inquiring about any of these programs is not going to put you into repayment. Don't panic. Don't think you're going to get a statement. Don't think that this is going to cause anything.
And as we wait for legislation to make a ruling on student loan forgiveness, which will only impact federal loans, Terry says people should take a look at their private loans as well.
Private loans, depending on whether you have a fixed or variable interest rate, you're going to want to see if you can get into a fixed rate loan. I mentioned earlier, interest rates are going up. We're in a rising interest rate market. That's one thing that everyone can agree on. And as a result of that, your monthly payments could be going up significantly as well. There's many, many refi programs that will allow you to get into a fixed interest rate to ensure that your private education loans are also repaid.
26 million borrowers have applied for student loan forgiveness. Terry says it's important to be on the lookout for scam emails, texts, and phone calls.
If you get a call and say someone says your loan's going to be forgiven, your loan's going to be discharged, any information along those lines, they don't have any other ability outside of what you're seeing with the Department of Education to forgive, to discharge, to have you released from that debt.
There is a way to double check, though. Federal loan servicers are listed at studentaid.gov. Terry says that most of the time, loan servicers won't ask you for personal information they already have, like your date of birth or social security number. Terry maintains that managing personal finances is possible, even though inflation makes it more difficult.
My only final thought, and I tell this to everyone, is don't procrastinate. So one of the things that we're famous for is finances are very scary for most of us. They've been very scary for all of us, and we really shouldn't procrastinate. And remember, even if you take one step forward, it's not only going to be to the benefit of you, but it's going to be the benefit of your family, as well as the possible future generation that you're bringing into the world.
For KBOO News, I'm Nina Mayfair.
The death toll in a major earthquake in Turkey and Syria is nearly 4,000 by the latest estimates. A 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck around 4 a.m., flattening nearly 5,000 structures in Turkey. Around 1,500 are estimated to have been killed in Syria. Rescuers worked through the night in near-freezing temperatures, searching through the rubble for survivors. Dozens of aftershocks, including one that registered at a 7.5, reverberated in the region. The quake could also be felt in Cyprus, Egypt, Israel, and Lebanon. It's the deadliest earthquake to hit the region in at least 20 years. Many refugees of the Syrian war were also in the area of Turkey where the earthquake hit the hardest. Turkey has taken in the most Syrian refugees of any country, over 3.5 million. Earthquakes are not uncommon in Turkey since the country sits on a number of fault lines, but the initial earthquake was at least as strong as the strongest recorded in Turkey in 1939. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on decolonizing self-care. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then stick around at 7 for Let's Talk About Race. Tonight's weather will be cloudy and gusty with winds up to 20 miles per hour. The low tonight is 39 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a daytime high of 48. Today in history, in 1996, the Willamette Valley floods washed away $500 million in property damage and claimed 8 lives in Oregon. The quote of the day is from American comic artist Jack Kirby, who died today in 1994. Kirby said, quote, "I felt comics grew because they were the common man's literature, the common man's art, the common man's publishing." Oregon Senators Jeff Merkley and Ron Wyden introduced legislation in the Senate this week that would protect the Smith River. Backers of the bill say the river and the region it runs through are known for their biodiversity. Eric Tegedoff has more.
A new bill in Congress would add greater protections to a river and its watersheds in southern Oregon. Oregon Senators Jeff Merkley and Ron Wyden have introduced legislation to expand the Smith River National Recreation Area by 58,000 acres. Owner of the Northwest Rafting Company, Zach Collier, says it's a remote and special part of the state well known for its biodiversity, from Chinook salmon to rare and endangered plants.
This water provides spawning habitat for fish, which people catch downstream, but also provides clear, clean water for people to enjoy who are rafting downstream, kayaking downstream, fishing downstream, and also drinking that water downstream.
The bill would protect the watershed of the North Fork of the Smith River in Oregon. The Smith River flows downstream into California, an area Collier says is well known for whitewater rafting. It would safeguard 74 miles of waterway, including creeks adjacent to the Smith River. It would also ensure that mining couldn't disrupt this sensitive habitat. Collier says nickel mining in particular has been proposed in the region.
Nickel mining is not good on places. It involves strip mining and tons of chemicals. It's not the cleanest way to mine. It would devastate this area that's uniquely special to the world.
Collier says it's important to protect the landscape and fish habitat, but he notes it's a special place that looks like it would be home on a different planet, literally.
The area gets tons of rain. It reminds me of being on Endor in Return of the Jedi. It's just very lush, very green, and just a magical, magical river.
The bill has the support of two California senators as well. It's been referred to the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
In the 1970s, Michigan had some of the toughest environmental regulations in the country. In the years since, though, lawmakers have whittled down those protections to where now state regulators are all but powerless. But as Mark Richardson reports, a new generation of activists are using new tactics to fight polluters, and they're getting results.
In the 1970s, during a very different political era, Michigan enacted strong environmental laws to hold polluters to account for their violations. By the early 2000s, however, deregulation had been used to defund and gut the state's regulatory agencies. The result was a series of ecological crises across Michigan. But in recent years, environmental activists have turned to the legal process, permit interventions, and the court of public opinion to stop polluters. Nicholas Leonard with the Great Lakes Environmental Law Center says some of their most effective actions have been filed under civil rights laws.
It really speaks to the heart of the concerns that our clients often have, which is we often hear from our clients, well, they wouldn't be locating this facility in a more affluent white community, or they wouldn't be treating people in this other community like this.
Leonard says the attorneys and activists see themselves as the last line of defense against polluters and step in when regulators fail. He says there have been several major victories, such as closing toxic incinerators, pushing utilities toward renewable energy, and shutting down industrial polluters. He says recently climate change is having some of the same disproportionate impact on communities of color that have been present in day-to-day environmental decisions regarding localized pollution.
What we're trying to make sure happens is that we're creating solutions to climate change, that they're not sort of perpetuating the legacy of environmental injustice that we've seen created through our fossil fuel economy.
Leonard says more than 20 years of budget and staff cuts under Republican leadership have rendered state agencies unable to enforce environmental regulations effectively. But with a new Democratic majority in the State House, he says there is hope for change.
Now we're at the point where it's like, okay, we've removed all known obstacles to addressing this issue. Now we purportedly have the legislature in Lansing that care about these issues, and it's something that they want to address.
For Michigan News Connection, I'm Mark Richardson.
The University of Maine has produced the first 3D-printed home made entirely of recycled and bio-based materials. They say it could be a game-changer in addressing their affordable housing shortage. Catherine Carley has more.
Engineers with the University of Maine say the successful construction of the world's first bio-based 3D-printed house could help alleviate the state's critical shortage of affordable housing. The university's Advanced Structures and Composite Center has unveiled a 600-square-foot single-family home made entirely of recycled wood fibers and bioresins and built using the world's largest 3D printer. Professor Habib Dagher calls the BioHome 3D a radical solution to a tough problem.
It gives us an opportunity to have sustainable housing for generations to come. So essentially we're growing everything we're building our homes with.
Engineers worked around the shortage of building materials by using wood waste already in ample supply at Maine sawmills. Dagher says his lab is currently scaling up the automation process and could eventually print one BioHome every 48 hours. It's estimated that Maine is currently in need of nearly 20,000 homes. The shortage has been exacerbated by pandemic-related price increases in building materials, as well as the state's continuing labor shortage. Dagher says the BioHome has held up well through some extreme winter storms and also drawn attention from fair housing advocates across the globe.
I think all of us would feel a big sense of accomplishment when we're trying to help people on the street have access to cost-effective homes, and that's the moment we're building for right now as a team.
That moment could arrive soon for Dagher and his team. Their lab, along with Penguis, a regional community action agency, has already received federal funding to build the first 3D-printed neighborhood for unhoused people in the Bangor area. For Maine News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
A South Dakota House committee approves a state measure to codify the Indian Child Welfare Act, an important piece of federal Indian law that's under threat from an impending Supreme Court decision. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A bill that would codify provisions of the Indian Child Welfare Act has been approved by the South Dakota House Judiciary Committee on a vote of 9-3. The bill requires the Department of Social Services to make active efforts to prevent removal of Native children from Native families. ICWA currently requires that measure, but the federal law has been challenged before the U.S. Supreme Court with an opinion pending. According to online reports, 10 states have already enacted their own Indian Child Welfare statutes, and five states, including South Dakota, are considering bills this year. Victoria Wicks has this report.
South Dakota State Representative Perry Puryear introduced House Bill 1168.
She told the House committee that poverty underlies many of tribes' challenges, and the vast majority of Native children removed from their homes are removed for neglect.
Neglect can often look like poverty to some people.
She said ICWA requires active efforts from states to keep Indigenous families together, but South Dakota law is largely silent.
There's nothing in code that outlines active efforts. All it says is that the state must have due regard to ICWA.
The Department of Social Services was represented at the hearing by General Counsel Jeremy Lippert. He noted that the U.S. Supreme Court is currently deliberating the constitutionality of ICWA, and when its opinion comes out, the state might have to recalibrate.
We may very well have a complex array of specific portions of the federal statute that stand or fall, to which the state's courts, legislature, and agencies will have to respond.
After witnesses testified, Representative Tim Reich spoke in favor of the bill. The former longtime Secretary of Corrections said South Dakota's prison population, both male and female, is disproportionately Native.
I'm not convinced that passage of this bill is going to change anything in a huge way, but I think we've got to try everything we can.
The committee approved the bill, and it now goes to the full House. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Over the course of 7 days, Team Alaska won 145 medals from the Arctic Winter Games in Canada, 58 gold, 44 silver, and 43 bronze. Alaska was second in the overall standings behind the Yukon Territories. Two 18-year-old Alaska Natives were in a tie for racking up the most gold for Team Alaska. Colton James Paul from Kipnuk and Parker Benjamin Kennick of Nome each won 5 medals. Both competed in Arctic Sports, a competition that features Native games traditionally used to sharpen survival skills. Kennick says this was his first Arctic Winter Games, so he did not expect to do very well, but says the high level of international competition plus encouragement inspired him to do his best.
With old friends, new friends, an audience, it'll lift you up. And you'll typically break your own records and surprise yourself, put on a show for everybody, have fun all around. It's nice to watch everybody do their best and break their own records.
Closing ceremonies were held Saturday. The games will take place in Alaska next year. The Yurok tribe is sponsoring a day at the state capitol in California on Tuesday in efforts to reduce violence against Native Americans. Tribal leaders, advocates, families, and state lawmakers are gathering in Sacramento for the first Missing and Murdered Indigenous People Day. They'll address issues involving MMIP, including advocating for bills involving public safety and protections for foster youth. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
State legislators in different parts of the country are taking aim at diversity and inclusion in school curriculum. But that actually runs counter to what a recent survey says students want and need from their education. Edwin J. Vieira reports.
While controversy rages on about the College Board's AP African American Studies course, Black students in a new survey say they want a more inclusive curriculum. In the survey by Youth Truth, Black students said they feel learning about Black American or African history can be a guiding factor for them to pursue higher education. But many history classes don't cover much about Black America, and lawmakers in multiple states aim to keep it that way, enacting laws that limit discussion on race and gender studies. Trevor Patton with Youth Truth says there are steps school districts can take to implement a more inclusive curriculum.
I think it starts by just having the conversation, right? Looking and examining the existing curriculum. Students have even noticed that there's a separation and asked for additional funding for extra classes. One student said, I wish the school had more funding for extra class choices.
She adds districts need to not only examine their current courses, but ask students for input and then work with experts in the field to develop a stronger curriculum. Patton feels the backlash that some Black history courses are facing is a product of not having more student, family, and community input. Youth Truth surveyed more than 28,000 high school seniors from the class of 2022 and the class of 2019 in 19 states, including New York. The College Board offers several courses on different cultures and histories, and only one on African American history so far. Much of the backlash was prompted by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has banned it from being offered in schools there. Patton says the survey confirms that students are concerned about the trend.
students are recognizing that they're not being represented in the classroom. One student said, "We also don't talk about racism and how it's affecting us as students. I want to learn about things that affect me and my family and friends, mainly about Black culture and history."
The survey also found students of color expect their schools to enact and champion anti-racist policies, and the number of young people who said they feel the adults in their school treat students with respect jumped from 57% before the pandemic to 70% in 2021. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 6th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, tips, and curiosities at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Nina Mayfair, and David Rosenberg. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegedoff, Mark Richardson, and Edwin J. Vieira. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. Thank you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. Self-care may have started as a Black feminist survival tactic, but some would say it's been transformed into something very different. Decolonize Self-Care is part of O.R. Book's new series, Decolonize That.